Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 338, how this regional small firm was acquired by a large national architecture firm, with Sandra Little, principal at Quinn Evans. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all for free. Gusto, easy online payroll benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. And Monograph, the time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects. Sandra Little, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I'm excited to be back. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, you're welcome. This is going to be fun. Let me just remind people who you are, and then we'll talk about what we're going to talk about. Sandra Little is an architect based in Detroit, Michigan, and a dedicated advocate for the revitalization of the urban realm. With expertise in building assessments and creative yet practical design strategies, she helps clients transform buildings, increase property values, and bring new life to aging communities. Sandra was here just a few weeks back here at the podcast with Karen Davis Burton to talk about their project, Noir Design Partie. You should definitely go back and listen to that episode. Noir Design Partie is a project designed to research and tell the stories of the professional journeys and creative works of Detroit's Black architects. And it's a fascinating story. It was a great conversation. You should definitely research and go find it, Noir Design Partie, on social media. They're in the process of building a new website to tell those stories. And so you'll have news on that as that develops. But during that conversation, while Sandra told us her origin story, Sandra referenced that the firm that she built from scratch was acquired by a much larger, more established national firm, Quinn Evans. And so that piqued my interest as well, and said, you know, a lot of people want to know that story, want to know how that happens. You build a practice, you know, and it becomes a target for a larger firm to want to, merge and bring you into a larger firm. And so, Sandra, I wanted you to come back and tell that story. We didn't have time to tell that story the first time. So I'm really happy that you found some time to come back and share that story. So thank you for that, first of all. Thanks for coming back. And then you told your whole origin story in the first episode, but I would love for you, in order to just set some context for anybody who did not listen to that first episode, share your origin story, how you got to where you are, what inspired you to become an architect, how you built your firm, And then we'll roll right into a conversation about the acquisition and how that all happened. So let's hear your story. How did it all start?
Okay. Well, as a young kid, I always was attracted to art and drawing and just the creative side of things. And I was very fortunate. My mother had a little bit of that creative vibe as well. So she would draw with me, and she used to sew. So she, you know, but she was her professional life wasn't you know, automotive manufacturer assembly line person. So, but she was very creative in her own right. So she let me live in that creative world. I was able to explore that, and it was very interesting when I came back to her and said, you know, I think I want to be an architect. I felt like I had to put something together that would make my mom proud. So it had to have the art piece to it and the professionalism to it as well. So we went through a little exercise, because architects as an African-American really wasn't in our kind of social network. So we went through an exercise together where we were figuring out what architecture was and how do I become one. And she actually also to like set up a meeting with me to talk with her plant engineer and take me up to their office and tour the plant to see if I wanted to do kind of, you know, automotive building design or be in the assembly line design. And, you know, I told her, yeah, I appreciated it. I learned a lot, you know, but I still think I want to be in architecture. So I kind of started out middle school drafting classes and art classes all the way through.
So how old were you when you sort of decided this is something that interests me?
I want to say it was right at the junior high school level. It was probably like 7th grade, around that age. Because by the time I was in middle school, I was already looking at like, I could take all the art classes I could get to. What's next, you know?
Right.
Printmaking classes. And I had some wonderful teachers that still were great influences along the way. I was very fortunate.
Did you? I'm sure there were barriers along the way. Were there barriers right from the beginning? Did you sort of experience any resistance from the beginning?
So you know what? I did not. I've had this conversation with a couple people that like I've spoken at events. You know, being an African American woman, and it's less than 450 African American licensed women architects in the United States. And they were like, yeah, I thought about that when I was a kid, but my guidance counselor said, you know, that's something that, you know, wouldn't be good for me. Or they were discouraged along the way. I was very fortunate with my guidance counselor. He pulled out like, oh, you want to be an architect? Here are the schools that are available in Michigan. Here are schools outside of Michigan. And by that time I was in high school, I had like my drafting teacher behind me and, you know, different teachers behind me. And in college, so it was the same thing. I did not get that, and I consider myself blessed and fortunate. I did not get that nudge of discouragement.
Yeah.
In college, I had professors that were that took to me, and I was, like I said, very, very fortunate in that, and encouraged me. I even had one professor when I went to school at Lawrence Technological University here in Michigan, and one professor just I was talking to her about design and my design ideas. And when I got up for a critique, I kind of froze. Right. I didn't know how to explain my design the way I wanted to. And she was just like afterwards, like, yeah, you should have just told me how to help you. You know, I could have told you just because you have a brilliant design. You just have to learn how to articulate yourself and get it out there. I mean, just very all along the way, just gentle nudges and great pushes to make it through.
Yeah, it's so important, the influences that we have as students and young architects. You know, I ask that question often to many of our guests because not about the resistance, but about the people who are in your life early on being an influence on the rest of what you do. When you don't receive that resistance, but you actually receive support and encouragement and the showing the way and have some guides along the way, and this is the way you do it. I think that probably influences everything else on the journey, right? Because you're not defensive, you're not looking for ways to sort of avoid those conflicts, because those conflicts weren't there early on and they continue to not be there. So
I will say it's a little different when I started to get into the business world.
Yeah.
I could talk about that in a few minutes, but it changed. As I got older, I realized perspective, right? That I did have it good. I came through without adversity, and then grew up in a neighborhood that was just like wonderful as far as upbringing. But I started to, as I expanded my territory, I started to see different forces and realized what I was stepping into. Like I didn't even realize until I started to do my research with Noir Design Partie about licensing statistics in Michigan, that at the time when I graduated from college, or graduated from high school, like 1988, the first licensed African-American woman architects were licensed in Michigan that year.
Oh, wow.
So it's like I never knew that what I was talking about becoming was such a rare jewel. You know, I was just oblivious to it. So I think if I would have known, that would have kind of almost been a deterrent to me. So, and that's why I think it's important to tell that story too.
That's why I asked, because I wanted you to be able to tell that story, because there are other people who are listening right now who, you know, there might be young students, there might be kids, there may be people who have gone through what you've gone through. And I wanted to make sure that story, you know, is told. So it's an important piece of it. What's interesting to me is when during your journey, you said maybe it was during your business, or maybe when did it become apparent to you that there could be resistance, that you actually had a good experience as a young Black architect? When did it become something that you acknowledged that, I actually had it pretty good because other architects didn't have that experience? When did that come to light for you?
It was definitely in college. It was definitely right after college, because I became all along in high school, no one was talking about being an architect. So, you know, I just like, okay, I just didn't know anybody who did that. So as I went to architecture school, architecture events, and started to see the numbers at these events, that I'm the only one in the room, or it's a couple of us in the room, and and then I would so I had cousins that went to school during the same time I did. It was like a group of three of us that were graduating the same year, going to college the same year. So they went to different schools, and when I came together for their workplace events, it was different statistics at the table. Like I'm like sitting at the dinner table, it's like, oh, it's a lot of African Americans that work for AT&T. Okay, wow. And then I go to an architecture firm, I was like, okay, I'm starting to get it. It's not a story that was told during the time of the early 90s, that, you know, all the statistics and data that's out there now about equity and inclusion and minority numbers weren't prevalent. And I've only came across actually in college the one book that really made me realize that, and that was a book that was written by Jack Travis. He's a Black architect out of New York. He also did like consulting with Spike Lee for Jungle Fever, the movie with the character Wesley Snipes played a Black architect in that movie. So I was starting to get exposed as I was educating myself and going through school and starting my professional career. So I was starting to see how rare things were. And then I have a couple colleagues in college that literally are still my lifelong friends now. One of them became my business partner. His name is Thomas. We met at Lawrence Technological University, and just meeting another African American that was, you know, that I could have a share story with. We've been friends for over now 25 years. So, and business business partners for the last, 10 years. So, it created that really big bond. And it was organizations like when I was at Lawrence Tech, like the National Organization of Minority Architects did not have a student chapter at Lawrence Tech at the time when I was there. So I was part of the American Institute of Architects, AIS student.
They have a great chapter.
Yeah, they had a great chapter. And then actually, ironically, there were two African-American presidents of the student chapter of AIS when I was at Lawrence. So I got to know them. But just like I said, just learning all the different aspects of it and how small of a number it was, it came over time.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I wanted to ask is I'm sure at one time that there was a very limited number, if not almost none, Black American architects, because of bias. As we move forward, last decade or so, and currently, and we obviously see those numbers going up, are those numbers due to bias now and previously, or is it more because Black architects didn't really have the opportunities that white architects had? And that's coming from somebody I just don't know. And so I wanted to ask that question.
No, it's very true. So as I was saying, if after I got into my practice and, you know, it was, and I feel like I didn't realize I was an entrepreneur. That's another thing too. So I feel like I've been going through this discovery, right? So in 2008, when the recession hit, and that's when I started my architectural firm. When I graduated from college, I never thought about starting an architectural firm. I was like, I want to get a nice job somewhere and just design, you know, this type of, you know, these types of buildings. And for me, it was like, oh, museums and, you know, institutional type buildings. I'm good. Not understanding the business nature of architecture being based on the recessions and economy and different things like that. I came out of school in the middle. I got my master's in 1998 in the middle of the Clinton years. Everything was good. I was like, okay, this is what I'm gonna do. And so to go through the cycle of recessions and starting my firm, I felt like I had got experience because I have worked for different firms that were large firms, like with Gaffari and Associates. I've worked with smaller firms like James Scott was the first guy I sold Patricia. I worked for. He was an African American architect, and Emmett Haygood with EBH Design. He had like a firm that was similar to our size, like a 10 to 12 person firm. So I felt like I knew the different firm types, so I could do it in 2008. But when actually going into the environment of trying to get work, it's tough from an African American standpoint because you don't have the same networks of wealth that and contacts that other non African American have. So I didn't have in my network a lot of people that were building homes. You know, I had to think of things in a different context. So how can I impact the African American community? I had to think of larger projects that were kind of community based. And then I can find some of my network contacts in those arenas. So with school design and knowing a couple people that were in the public school system. And so I had to work my network, right? So it wasn't that I knew anybody who could introduce me to a CEO of a company or anything like that. That was just not the contact list that I have. I'm the first generation college graduate out of my family. So I had to build my network along with building my practice. And was very fortunate in doing that. And at the time in 2008, I felt like, okay, I graduated from college, but I did not have a background in business. There were no entrepreneurship classes in college when I went to schools and graduated in the late 90s. There were, you know, at the time, the American Institute of Architects, besides the architectural handbook, really didn't talk about how to set up and start your practice. There was a couple of books out there, and I just felt like, well, how am I going to do this, right? And I didn't have entrepreneurs in my family. You know, everybody from my family, a lot of them worked in the automotive industry. So I dug in deep. I started to network at Tech Town Detroit here locally, which is a business incubator that was started, I think, in 2004. So I started my practice in 2008. And they were, you know, started this innovation hub in Detroit, because even entrepreneurship wasn't really that friendly in Detroit. It was really based on manufacturing, the big three.
Yep.
And entrepreneurship had kind of died here in Metro Detroit. So entities like Tech Town and the Michigan business leaders were trying to change that story and that narrative. And then when the recession hit, And everybody in Michigan realized that all of our eggs are in the automotive basket. Everybody wanted to change that. So I was there for a ground level of entrepreneurship push in Metro Detroit, working in, it's almost like what people talk about in, you know, innovation hubs and co-working spaces, that serendipity type of connection. So I started to meet people. I enrolled in programs just to get entrepreneurship training and how to set up my back of house office items. And so I went through Tech Town's program that they had called Smart Start, and that was sponsored by the Kauffman Foundation. So got a program. We went through like a 12-week program there to help me and my business partner both get, you know, kind of a foundation of what we should be doing. So we, you know, what type of business are we setting up? We're doing an LLC. And then, okay, what is an operating agreement? We need to do that. So it gave us that step-by-step thing of what we needed to do to kind of put the business in order. And then the network grew from there. So I started meeting other businesses in these training classes that I was going to learn about entrepreneurship. So it became like a B2B type relationship. So like some of our first clients were small businesses that were, one was starting a daycare. So we were like, okay, we can help you, you know, move into a larger facility from your home to do that. And then another client was actually in Tech Town with us, and then moved into a larger office space, started to really grow. They were in the energy sector. And so we worked on her office design, and actually she's upsized twice. So we worked on two office designs for her. So it all of our networks came from very grassroots, very business entrepreneurship digging in. It was just digging in the community here that was growing here in Detroit. And then ended up within our practice designing the largest co-working space that was in Metro Detroit in 2000. It opened in 2014, so which was Tech Town's Junction 440 co-working space. So, and that was amazing because they were like, design a space with 20,000 square feet with everything you needed when you started your business. I was like, this is no problem. I could do this.
Yeah, I got it.
I needed conference rooms. I needed a place to have meetings and whole workshops. So yeah, so that was just like the ideal project to start. And we won a design award for that. So things with the practice just started to grow very organic. We did, we targeted, you know, our business development was just based on, like I said, targeting our relationships and leveraging our relationships. We leveraged social media because we were like, we don't have money for a PR person or any campaigns. Because like I said, starting from nothing. But I my kids taught me Facebook. I jumped on Twitter. I started a LinkedIn page, and we blast everything that we, and we started a blog site. It was called Inside the Studio. So we blogged and posted about every little thing we were doing, even behind the scenes, just like, oh, today it was a site visit. You know, this is a picture of the studio today. My son's in the studio today. So just making it very personable. Right. And people almost saw the growth, you know, so they actually a lot of support on that side. But I realized that I didn't have the advantages of getting some of the larger projects because I didn't know the right people to get the larger work at Tech Town. That was a wonderful project because I literally was involved in their entrepreneurship program. So I actually knew the executive director. Before that, I would have never known her, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a very inspiring story. There are hundreds, thousands of architects that start practices every year, and I think we're going to see a wave of many new practices starting in the next coming year or two. Right. And your story of saying, okay, I started from scratch. I started from zero, right? And the first thing you recognized and the first thing you did was build a foundation. You went out and learned what you needed to learn in order to be an entrepreneur, in order to be an architect, business owner architect. And then from that, you learned business. And from building that foundation, you found a network and then started to build and recognize that that network was important. And that network was what was going to get you more work. And then you learned to leverage that network.
Yes.
And that network brought you more work. And then you took that work and you leveraged that work to get bigger work. And so that story, for every young architect, I hear it all the time. How do I get work? I have no connections. I'm just a brand new architect. How do I start? There you go. Yeah. There's your story. There's your formula. Sandra just gave it to you. You can start it from scratch and you can see what she built. We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size your architecture firm, Arcat.com. Arcat is the online solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and much, much more from leading manufacturers from all over the world. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place, fast and easy. And best of all, it's free. Arcat doesn't charge you anything for these resources. You don't even need to register or give them your email. And when I say it's free, there's no catch. Visit Arcat.com and try it out. Search for the resources that you need and Arcat will deliver. That's Arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Arcat.com. Build better. Taking care of your employees has never been more important than now. For years, Gusto's been helping more than 100,000 small business owners run payroll, offer benefits, onboard new employees, and more. They call it the People Platform. And it doesn't just look nice, and it does look nice. It also works. Your payroll taxes are filed, deductions are calculated, and your team gets paid. You can even offer health insurance and 401ks as you grow. As a listener of the Entree Architect podcast, you will get 3 months free after your first payroll when you go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto. And make sure that you let them know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Gusto, the people platform. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. Are you tired of spreadsheets? Of using spreadsheets to keep track of your project plans, your budgets, your staff, your time? Spreadsheets. Our friends at Monograph know what that's like because they're architects too. They know all about that spreadsheet mess that you're dealing with. So they did something about it. Monograph is a time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects to respond to the challenges that small and medium-sized firms face on their quest to a profitable business. With Monograph's integrated suites of tools, you'll stay on track and on budget without the overhead of wrangling spreadsheets every day. Improve your firm's operations today. Try Monograph for free at entrearchitect.com/monograph. Ditch the spreadsheets. Visit entrearchitect.com/monograph and try Monograph today for free. Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Talk about the practice just before acquisition. What did you build it into?
Okay. And like you said, it's nothing like a recession to make you almost jump in the water and you have to swim, right? So that's kind of really what that story was like.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to figure this out.
You were determined, right?
Right,
this,
right.
I was not going to fail. That's what I hear, is that, you had set your sights. We are going to succeed. We are going to build this firm and there's nothing going to stand in our way. And you just kept pushing forward. The other thing I left out of that formula is that you kept moving forward, right?
Yeah.
You saw the opportunity and you kept moving toward that next opportunity, which is how you grow, right?
Yeah.
You don't, and you said to use the word organically. That's how it works, right? You build the foundation, then things start to happen. You need to be, you have to have the ability to recognize those opportunities and then pursue those opportunities.
Yeah.
And some of those opportunities are really scary, right?
That's true.
A lot of them
That's
are
true.
Way bigger than you think you can handle, but you still pursue them. And so those are some really, really great lessons. So you went from scratch, you built this firm, and it grew, right? So how what did the firm look like, as it grew into its largest.
So we started out, actually, with three partners, and one partner dropped out of the Centric Design Studio entity and moved out of state. So it was me and Damon remaining. And then we picked up like two employees that we had worked with at the other firms that actually helped us with kind of production side of things. So we did a lot of, instead of direct hiring, we did a lot of contract employees to help with the big production type loads. And then we also did a lot of internships. So this is something you talked about too. Like after my realization as an African-American woman, how hard it is within the field of architecture, one of the key things that was to the center of our practice was bringing in interns every year. And it was not only just college interns, it was also high school interns. We were located in Midtown Detroit, and we were two blocks away from College of Creative Studies. They had a university prep school that was 9th grade to 12th grade, and then the 12th grade students had a senior practicum that was part of their graduation requirement. Yeah. And they had to get 50 hours in a professional setting for their career choice. So since College of Creative Studies was based on, you know, the creative industry and the background there, we had the school correct, you know, basically Google us and saw what was close to them. And they called us and was like, hey, you know, I see your website. I see you're not far from us. We have this program. And I was like, yes, you know, I'm already bringing in college students. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And then a lot of these students were African-American students that were, I'm thinking about architecture. I'm not sure. We did bring in one student who was looking at graphic design, and they actually helped out with some of the graphics for our other project, Noir Design Part T, while they were in our firm. But to me, that was something that I had to put into the practice based on what I had learned about the low numbers of minority students. So I think we've had over from that university, college, CCS's high school program, I think we've had over six to seven students from that program come through our office. And then we also started to do a program with the city of Detroit. Mayor Duggan introduced this project called Go Detroit Young Talent. So we hired another high school student, two high school students from that program. And Vincent stayed with us a long time. So he's still trying to get through the college side of things now. But yeah, he started as a high school student with us. So that was important. So our practice became, like, especially during the summer, this breeding ground and this almost this think tank. And I said, and then that I think has grown my other entrepreneurial endeavors like Noir Design Party and other things. So in a given time during the summer, this practice was, roughly 8 to 10 people in the summer months of people production wise, contract employees, the three permanent people we had, and just, you know, so it just really started to grow. And then we started to team with larger firms. And that's kind of where it started to come closer to the acquisition portion. So we teamed with the firm that my business partner, Damon Thomas, worked with, which was Harley Ellis Devereaux out of Southfield. We teamed with them on the DMC Cardiovascular Center and was able to get a large, you know, basically new construction project that we could put on our website for the Cardiovascular Center. And he has a healthcare background and doing healthcare design. So that was just wonderful. So,
and that's another scary opportunity, right? Another yes. step. You look at that and say, well, maybe we can team with these big firms. Oh, that's really scary. I don't know how to do that. You know, you could have said, I don't want to do that. That's too difficult. And just kept doing what you were doing, right? You had a business that worked, but you didn't, right? Yeah. That opportunity came to you.
There was a lot of things that were scary, like you said. It was it was wonderful to have a business partner. I know people have had stories where it could be either or with a partner, but with me and my business partner, we had a great relationship. And we would talk about things like that. Well, we have to go to the pre-bid and, you know, your old firm is going to be there or my old firm is going to be there. Yep. And we really had to talk ourselves through that. We're like, well, forget that. We're on our own now. Let's do this. Like, you know, and pumped each other up to go to and make those phone calls. Or you call your contacts at Harley and I'll call my contacts at the old firms that I work with about, you know, teaming. And then we had a couple of firms that did reach out to us. Right. So that came, actually with the Quinn Evans, they reached out to us, and we were, looking at, they were, production wise, at capacity for a project that they didn't want to turn away. And so they were like, okay, do you have, and I never said no. That's the other thing too. When someone called me, good and bad too, right? Yeah. So when somebody called me, it's like, do you have?
Oh yeah, we can do that.
Exactly. Yes, I do.
Like, they can help. Click. How do we do that?
Exactly.
We better hire some people, because I just said we have four people in the back.
Exactly. So yeah, never say no. And definitely, like I said, they were, you have production staff. So yes, I'm calling my network like, hey, how are you doing? Or I knew some people that were out of work. I was like, yes, let me call such and such. They'll be perfect for this project. And I would literally contract them out to someone else, and I'm contracting them. So just to, you know, whatever it took to answer the demand, right? So that built great relationships with the larger firms. Like, so we had done it once with Harley S. Devereaux. We did it, but the firm that I was at before, Gaffari and Associates, we teamed on a couple of projects with them. Actually, they were, Gaffari and Associates is a full AE firm, and we teamed with them on a couple of projects. But when we had the project at Tech Town, they were the MEP engineers for our project under us at the Tech Town renovation. So that it was leveraging those old relationships. As they say, never burn a bridge, because I went back to, like, literally, and worked almost with all my past employers, myself and my business partner, Damon Thomas. We both
You wore grooves in those bridges.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm going to come back across, right?
You didn't just burn it. You used it back and forth and back and forth. Yeah.
So keep those contacts. So, and then with Quinn Evans, we just it was a good working relationship. We did several projects together with them. Renovation of modern buildings, converting them into, from office buildings into residential, which is, you know, becoming really big here, and one project in Toledo. Actually, I had some really good employees over the years, very fortunate with that. I guess that comes from a lot of gut feeling hiring people. And I didn't realize how much I watch people. I watch people and I can figure out how they're going to fit into a project.
Intuitive.
And
what
they're going to be good at. So I had a couple of great employees. One I've actually, he's moved out of state, and even the people at Quinn Evans is like, if Wiley comes back, we're going to hire him here. So he great employee. He was actually our intern that came out of Bowling Green, with our firm, summer internship, African-American young man, great talent. And, So we continued on with Quinn Evans. I contacted them about a couple of opportunities that I was looking at with Detroit Public Schools, and they reached out to us on another one with Detroit Public Schools, and we were teamed up with another firm, OHM, and going after work for Detroit Public Schools, looking at, you know, kind of the downsizing of the shrinking population of the city of Detroit, and what does that mean to a school system, and what does that mean to their feeder pattern for their high schools and the district, and just studying that. And so we just kept building this relationship. And then this project came up from Michigan SHPO office that was a grant that came from the National Park Service for African-American civil rights sites within the city of Detroit. So I called Quinn Evans. I was like, I really want to go after this project. I know I need, you know, more SHPO experience, and I know you have it, but I know you need an African American too to be on this project. So it's
mutually benefit.
That's right. Yeah. Right. So we actually won that project. And so for that point, one of the principals at Quinn Evans approached me because she was on the fellowship committee for AIA Michigan. So she's a past fellow, and she was like, you should apply for your fellowship. She's like, you have enough going on with your practice, you know, mentoring in your practice and all the community projects you do. I think you're a good candidate for it. And, just the sheer less number of minorities that are FAIA, I think that we should work with you. So I started to work with the AIA committee, and she started to hear more of my story. So she was like, well, you know, and we were winning.
She didn't know how deep it went.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, we just heard that story. I mean, you are the living definition of an entrepreneur architect. I mean, you like went from zero to building a firm that was acquired by a big firm. I mean, that's when you think of entrepreneurial tech firms or startups, that's the story, right? They started from scratch in a garage and they built it into this big company that a bigger company comes and recognizes the benefit of having them become part of their company. And you did the same thing in architecture.
Yeah. And it's like, we didn't know our worth, you know. It was just like, we were just working. Our whole push for our firm was just based on our work ethic. You know, we were like, the only way, you know, we started during the recession. We said the only place to go is up. And the only way that this place is going to close down is if we turn the lights off. So that was the philosophy that drove the firm. And I didn't realize how everybody was paying attention to that. I mean, we were doing the behind the scenes, but people were really looking at it, you know?
Yeah.
So Quinn Evans, you know, asked us, you know, well, what do you think about, the entire firm coming over and being acquired with us? You know, we were like, whoa, okay. Yeah. It's like, We had talked about, through the series of programs, we were going through a tech town. We went through I talked about their Smart Start program. I also went through the SBA Emerging Leaders program for the Small Business Administration. And I went through Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business program. So there was a portion in that program that talked about succession planning and what are you going to do, to close this out. And I left the class like, I still really don't know what I'm going to do. But I was like, yeah, what do we do? I said, well, maybe my son, because he's the only one that's interested in architecture. I said, he's 14. By the time we retire, he'll be old enough to take over the firm. I said, maybe it's that. Other than that, I really didn't think about having another firm acquire us. Or we talked for a moment like, well, should we buy another legacy African-American architecture firm after one of the founders in Detroit had died? It's like, or it was a couple retiring as well. So the conversations had happened around what to do next, but this one was totally unexpected when we were asked to do this. So we were thinking it through, and you know, the biggest thing is, you know, how do we the biggest thing with the decision was emotionally.
Yeah, I want to ask, and you're bringing it up. I wanted to ask that. What were the feelings when somebody came to you and said, "We want to acquire your firm"? And we want to bring your firm into our culture and our company and our policies and our rules. What was the feeling? The initial feeling?
Yeah, it was like, so one of the things was that we were talking about like opportunities for minority firms. Well, the number of minority firms in the Metro Detroit area has declined since the 1990s to today. So you do have and then that 2% number has stayed the same, and then the number of firm owners has decreased. So the first emotional thing was, it's only like three or four now minority architecture firms in Detroit, and we're going to take one away if we
you reduce the numbers.
Right. We're reducing the numbers, joining another majority firm. So luckily, like I said, because of all these programs, some of the things that we had in place were mentors and advisory board. So started to talk to them about this process. And it was like a 6-month process that we went through with Quinn Evans. So it happened in kind of mid 2018. And by beginning of January of 2019, we were signed paperwork on Christmas Eve, the 24th of 2018.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. We had to have breakfast afterwards. But the mentor was just like, you have to make a list and separate your emotional feelings from the business side of it. So list out all the business benefits of what you're getting from it, and then list out the emotional, and then you and your partner talk about it. And we did that separately. So we came back together and was like, okay, we both had the African-American architect thing on there, and that being a disappointment. And then, but the business side of it was really good. So we were acquired, and we basically did like an asset sale. So we sold our future work and stuff, projects we hadn't even started yet, that we had won in RFP processes with the city of Detroit and with developers that were in the city. So yeah, we were starting to get in the newspaper, and that was kind of the state of our firm that we were winning this work. So we basically made that, a couple of computers, and then our key personnel that came over with us was all like an asset that went toward myself and my business partner, Damon, having stock ownership in Quinn Evans Architects. So Quinn Evans, like I said, it was just, like I said, all just good on the business side. You know, you're looking at the structure of the deal, and we got kind of an offer sheet or a term sheet that we were looking at and what they were offering. So all of that looked very well, because in a firm with a great relationship, a 35-year-old firm that has started out in basically with two owners, Mike Quinn and Dave Evans, and they started it 35 years ago, one office in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and one office in D.C., and basically based their practice on historical preservation and having the government work out at the D.C. office, and Ann Arbor having a lot of work with the National Park Service, and just 35 years of their growth of that firm, and the increase from basically the two of them starting it to now it's 200 people with six offices. The story of that entrepreneurship actually appealed to both of us. So it's the firm itself that in the culture we were coming into, we knew how the working relationship was. They loved buildings, they loved architecture, they were sustainable, all of the key things that we liked. But there's the story and the entrepreneurial nature of Quinn Evans is still there. And the starting of the Ann Arbor office jumping and starting the Detroit office, it started with four people. And, now the Detroit office is 24 people. Just the whole story of that was appealing. So me and my business partner was like, okay, this is they're doing the same thing we were doing. And it just, it's been longer. It's been longer than 10 years for them. It's been 35 years, and they're doing it. And they're doing other business measures, acquiring firms. And so it was very appealing. The offer for the stock offer with our asset sale portion was very appealing as well. So it kind of answered a lot of questions for us as far as retirement and still protection for our employees that are coming over. Nobody's going to get lost in the shuffle. It was a very appealing business deal. But and it was like, like you said, feeling wise, it was, what if we didn't do this? So, we did go through that scenario. What if we don't do this? What does that mean? And now looking back at COVID-19 and seeing like, oh man, what would it be like if we were still in the firm now? Yeah. Oh goodness. It's like, we do feel like now hindsight, we made the right decision, but it was still like, well, okay, in the deal, can we negotiate to still keep reserve the right to our name, Centric Design Studio, and keep that to the side just in case it doesn't work out? Or, there was a lot of different feelings. Like, this is a big change, right? I've been doing this for 10 years. I'm letting go of a baby. It was a little bit of a hard thing to let go of that growth and that success. But it was a great homage that, that we did something that people recognized. And then during that same 6-month period, two other firms approached us about, what do you think about coming over our firm? We had not exposed anything that we were doing with Quinn Evans. So it was just like seeing that the offer come repeatedly.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, then maybe this is the right thing.
You had built a firm that others were interested in because of the business that you had built. Yeah. Right. And I also look at what you said about your concern about reducing the numbers of Black architect minority owned firms in Michigan. And I see it listening to your story and listen and looking at the scenario of what you've put before us. I see it as a gain because you will inspire so many other young architects, Black and white, that you have built this firm from zero and built it to a firm that was so valuable and so successful that there were other large firms that wanted your firm to be part of their firm. And not because you were Black, but because you built a great firm, right? That you are a successful entrepreneur. And I think that is so inspiring that you will influence so many other architects, and you're doing it anyway. You're doing it proactively, mentoring and inspiring other young architects to learn what you've learned, taking the lessons that you've learned and teaching them so they can move forward. Much like you had that support and encouragement when you were younger, you're doing the same thing, but you as a role model, that you built this firm from zero, built it to the point where, you know, somebody paid you for your company to be part of their company. That is incredibly inspiring and motivational for any young architect to hear that story and say, well, maybe I can do that too. And so many lessons in the story that you just presented, I can't even number. Can you put a number to how many lessons you taught us about building a business? And so I believe that that number of minority architects will go up because of the decisions you've made. You may have taken one out, but there will definitely be multiple coming in directly because of what the decisions you made, because of the story that you can now tell.
Right. That's great. That's great. Like I said, I didn't think about it when it was happening, but I'm starting to feel that way now. Now I'm on the National Organization Minority Architects National Board. I'm on the Midwest Regional Vice President, and our current president, Kimberly Dowdell, you know, her motto for her presidency is All In for NOMA, and the All stands for, you know, access, leadership, and legacy. So legacy can mean a lot of different things. You know, it is when they say succession planning, there are a lot of different aspects to succession planning. It's not just keeping the name to your firm and passing it on. It is also like you said, just like tech companies, it is selling your firm and leveraging your growth that you have to be a part of something bigger and actually be at, you know, and have a seat at things like large firm roundtables and
exactly,
be able to have a voice at different things like that. But yeah, it does have a great effect. A lot of people have asked me about it, how am I doing? And, what do you think about the decision? This is amazing. This is the first time in the history that I know of in Metro Detroit that a minority firm was acquired by a majority firm. But one thing too that was very appealing about Quinn Evans Architects that a lot of people did not know is that Quinn Evans Architects is 52% woman owned. They are 52% employees by women. Mm-hmm. And the objective is to be woman owned after the next presidency within the firm. So I had no idea across all the different offices that it was that many women in the firm of this size of 200, and that's something I had never came across too. So that was appealing to me. And it was said that kind of firms like with Quinn Evans that, you know, do a lot of adaptive reuse projects and preservation projects. It attracts a lot of women to that practice because of the empathy and they have for saving buildings and actually telling the stories behind the buildings as well. The history portion of that that comes out of the stories when we adapt buildings and people tell the story of that transformation of what used to be here, and it feeds into the story of revitalization in the city of Detroit. It all connects, well to my heartstrings. And like I said, that was just more of the attraction to the firm, Quinn Evans.
Yeah. It's such a good story. I am so glad you came back to tell the story. You know, I just thought, oh, it would be a great story to hear, you know, an architect sort of building their firm and being acquired and sort of talking about the technical part of it, you know, how did the offer come along? But your story is so inspiring from beginning to end that I'm so happy to be able to have you come on the show and be able to record it and have it here in our archive forever, because it is a super inspiring story to anybody who's starting an architecture firm.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you for telling it. Before we wrap things up here, I want to ask you the one question that I ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, I would definitely say similar to some of the things that I had to do in the past, definitely connect yourself back to your background, your roots, so that everybody can learn your journey and your story. That'll come out in your practice. It'll come out in your work and the type of projects that you do. Like I said, able to do the type of projects that I was able to work on in Detroit. I feel like that, you know, going through entrepreneurship, I have projects that are related to entrepreneurship, going through community projects. I have made connections and a network across the city that everybody understands that I care about the city of Detroit, that I care about every project and every client that we have. So I think if you have that genuine relationship with everything that you do and starting your practice, I think you will be a success. After that, there's no way to failure, right?
Yeah.
So just and then if you don't know something, there's classes out there and there's things online that help you figure it out. So don't give up.
And don't say no.
And don't say no.
Don't say no.
When you pick up that phone, do not say no.
Yeah. Her name is Sandra Little. You can learn more about Quinn Evans at quinnevans.com. You can learn more about Noir Design Partie on social media with on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And a website for Noir Design Partie is on its way. Don't forget that. So hook up on social media and then when the website's ready to go, you can learn all about the stories of Black architects in Detroit. It'll be fantastic. I'd love to have you come back again when that website's ready to go.
All right, let me know,
and we'll have you back. Sandra, this has been such an inspiring conversation. I know I kept using that word during this conversation, but it is. I am so pumped up and inspired to hear your story, and I appreciate you for telling it here for other young architects to hear your story. So thank you very much for joining me here today and sharing your story at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. This means a lot coming from you. You are a great inspiration to all of architects out there starting their practices. So thank you. That means a lot.
You're welcome, Sandra. Thank you. You've been listening to episode 338 with Sandra Little. The link to the show notes and the link to share with a friend is entrearchitect.com/episode338. Please share this episode with a friend. And I'm saying this every episode now. This is one of those episodes that you should share. This is such an inspiring story. If you know somebody who is considering building a firm that is acquirable or wants to be acquired by a larger firm, Sandra just gave you the story of how she did it. And so go check this out at entrearchitect.com/episode338 and share that link with a friend. And big news, the website Noir Design Partie is live. We recorded this episode a month or two ago, and the website is now live at noirdesignpartie.com. So go check it out. Noir Design Partie documents the careers and creative works of Detroit's African-American architects. Sandra and Karen Davis Burton have worked so hard at making this project happen. You can learn more about it at entrearchitect.com/episode326. We talked all about it in that episode, entrearchitect.com/episode326. Go check it out and learn about a little piece of all our heritage as architects at noirdesignpartie.com. Before we wrap up here at this episode, don't forget to check out all our resources at entrearchitect.com. They're sitting there waiting for you at entrearchitect.com. You can join us for a monthly business training and tons of resources. 30 days for free. You can go in, check it out, join us at one of our trainings for free for 30 days, entrearchitect.com/join. Join our powerful mastermind groups, Entree Architect Mastermind. Those are professional peer groups with, 8 to 12 fellow architects. They meet weekly, super powerful peer groups. entrearchitect.com/mastermind. If you're looking for something to help you sort of grow and stay focused and hold yourself accountable, that's where you want to go, entrearchitect.com/mastermind. And you can join in on the fun at our free private Facebook group, the most positive, most engaged community on the internet for small firms, at entrearchitect.com/group, the Entree Architect community on Facebook. And if you don't like Facebook, but you want to join that community, just favorite that link, entrearchitect.com/group. That's how you can join. That's also how you can access that group without finding your way into the rest of Facebook, right? The Facebook group is amazing. It is worth being a member of Facebook. EntreArchitect.com/group will get you directly into that group. We have everything you need to build a better business at EntreArchitect.com. The Entree Architect Podcast. This podcast is a proud member of the new Gable Media Network. Subscribe to this and all the Gable Media podcasts at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. Be well, my friends. Be healthy. Be happy, safe, secure. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.